This is Nachiyomi, Sefer Shmuel El Bet, chapter 23. This chapter begins with another brief poem that is introduced as the last words of David, not meaning his last words on his deathbed, but the last words he pronounced under divine inspiration. This is the only time in the book of Shmuel that we find David referred to by his famous moniker, the Sweet Singer of Israel. David reflects upon his selection by Hashem for kingship and his profound sense of moral obligation to rule justly. He compares the emergence of his monarchy to sunlight that shines upon the vegetation of earth on a cloudless morning following the rain. David contrasts his radiantly blossoming regime, which is sure to flourish in the future, with the kingdoms of the wicked, that are like thorns that must be torn away with iron implements or burned in their place because nobody wants to touch the kingdoms of the wicked. The chapter proceeds to describe for us the inner circle of David's officers and commanders. Although interpretation of the text is somewhat challenging and the organization is difficult to follow, it appears that they are divided into three categories. The first tier of officers, which is comprised of three elite commanders, the second tier also comprised of three, and then 30 officers who were counted among the best of David's men but were not equal in skill or status to the first six. When one more officer is included, either Yoav ben Tseruya or Benayahu ben Yehoyada, one of those two, we arrive at a final number of 37 total. There are other ways of understanding the count here and the hierarchy being described, but this seems to be the simplest one. It's noteworthy that both Uriah HaChiti, the victim of David's most heinous crime, the former husband of Bathsheba, as well as the son of Achitophel, David's renegade advisor, are numbered among his best and brightest troops. In addition to describing the impressive deeds of several of these heroes, the text recounts an incident during David's period of hiding from Shaul. At this time, David was in the cave of Adullam, and three of his officers were with him, and the Pelishtim occupied Beit Lechem at the time. David expressed a strong desire to drink of the cool waters of the well from Beit Lechem, although it was under occupation. Three of his officers, three of these top officers, apparently the ones from the second tier, snuck into the Pelishti camp and returned with the water that he had mentioned. David didn't want to encourage this kind of risky behavior for insignificant reasons, so he spills out the water that they brought him. Although I'm sure he wanted to drink it, he refused to validate their manifestly courageous but irresponsible act. It wasn't worth it to risk their lives in order to bring him water. The reader wonders what objective the text serves in providing us with vivid details of the exploits of David's soldiers against the Pelishtim, against lions, all kinds of very, very rich descriptions, particularly when we've already finished the essential narrative of David's life and career. The sages of the Talmud propose metaphoric interpretations of several of the battles described here. And it seems like they do that in order to emphasize that David's men were not mere brutes or ninjas who were attacking Pelishtim and claiming lots of casualties. They were scholars of Torah and spiritual personalities as well as warriors. For instance, the water drawn for David from Beit Lechem is interpreted as knowledge of Torah that David wanted to obtain from the Sanhedrin that happened to be in Beit Lechem. Similarly, Benayahu ben Yehoyada's slaying of a lion in a pit on a snowy day is read as a metaphor for his conquering a very difficult halachic text under trying circumstances. It's easy to dismiss this approach as very fanciful and unfaithful to the plain meaning of the text. But I'd argue that the rabbi's method is really well-grounded in principles that we've already learned from the Tanakh, specifically from the Book of Shofatim, where we saw that political and military triumph are inseparable. They are inseparable in Hashem's plan from religious redemption and salvation. Consider Gideon, for example. He had to liberate himself from the idolatry of his father's house before he could lead the nation. And he was only allowed to employ soldiers who demonstrated that they had kept themselves free of idolatry as well. Alternatively, you have Devorah, who did not command Barak to lead the Jews in battle until they had returned to Torah life first. But really, we don't have to look all the way back to the Book of Shofatim. We can look even to the Book of Shmuel. The very beginning of the Book of Shmuel, we saw that the political downfall of the Jews was part and parcel of its spiritual decline under the corrupt leadership of the sons of Eli. The resurgence of the strength and autonomy of the Jewish people and their eventual establishment of a monarchy occurred only because the groundwork was first laid by Shmuel, who re-educated the nation and placed them back on the path of Torah. So we see that the idea of primitive muscle men who would be agents of the divine plan is anathema to the Tanakh. And the rabbis, based upon this premise, read the stories here as parables of spiritual as well as military victory. They did this not because they wanted to recast the heroes of the era of David in some kind of anachronistic way in their own image as rabbinical scholars of their period, but because they understood the underlying themes of Tanakh and its message. They knew that the notion of celebrating or attaching intrinsic value to military conquest or political achievement outside the context of Torah or service of Hashem would contradict the whole spirit of our tradition. They correctly rejected the idea that an action hero would be put on a pedestal in Judaism simply by virtue of his physical feats on the battlefield. And therefore, they explained to us that what we witness here is a collection not of simply strong men demonstrating their masculinity or their power, but we see representatives of Torah out fighting to preserve the Jewish tradition, to preserve the Jewish nation, to continue our mission of sanctifying Hashem's name in the world.